Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
We just have to do whatever it takes us to change this. And we are not going to hope about that. We're just going to acknowledge that we are a sacred bridge between our ancestors and our future generations, and we are just going to go out there and take action. We're going to be the DNA of our planet. And when I say the DNA, I don't mean the desoxyribonucleic acid, which is in chemistry, right? I mean that we are descendants and now ancestors. We're going to try to be prudent elders, and we are going to do whatever it takes to change this for our children.
That's the voice of Professor Marcelo Saavedra. On this week's show, we speak to Marcelo about his inspiring students and how they've written a new constitution. He also poses very interesting perspectives on our traditional view of rights and the use of hope. So stay tuned.
What other ways are there to understand the world? Is there a different way that we can imagine ourselves and the world and us within it? My next guest is Professor Marcelo Saavedra Vargas at the University of Ottawa, and I'm very privileged to have him on our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, hello, Sylvia. I'm glad to be with you and with your audience. And I have a whole set of very enlightened students, and I am totally engaged with them.
Now, it's interesting that you bring your students into the fold, because most people, when they are introduced, they talk about themselves. They don't talk about the contributions that their students make. So I think it's a really important comment that you just made, and I'd like to begin our discussion there. You know, within education, how we see the world, how we understand the world impacts the kinds of theories that we put forth about what the world is and what is possible to know about the world. Today we are faced with the storm, you know, the storm of capitalism, neoliberalism, and a climate change storm that we know is displacing thousands of people worldwide. And so the response, I think, needs to have a different approach if we're going to have a different result. How is the current paradigm impacting the way we create solutions to the problems we face as a society today?
Yes, thank you for the question, Sylvia. I believe that the current system, the current paradigm where we have been imposed to, basically stems from the modern civilization. And modern civilization is a paradigm that hates everything so much that it even hates itself, and it's destroying itself. It doesn't respect the magical and mysterious circle of life. It doesn't respect existence. So if they don't respect existence, and it goes very well with the song that you had previously, they should expect resistance. And that's what we are doing. We are resisting the imposition of a particular perspective on what means to be human. So we are resisting, and we are trying to put forward an ancestral knowledge of harmony and equilibrium that comes from our elders and that comes from our cultures. And I mention my students because recently they have come out very strong. They have drawn a constitution, and they have drawn a plan of action so they can have a voice in the university system. And I'm so humbled by their being so enlightened in this process, and that also we have decided in our classes that we are going to prolong our course beyond the university system and do a spiritual workshop over the summer, and we are going to conclude with a gathering in Cucumville, which is an Algonquin reserve in northern Quebec, just to understand who we are and why we are, something that we have forgotten, and that's very much part of the current system. You know, we are brought to believe that we are just consumers, basically consumers, you know, and that we are not that. We are cosmic beings. We come from Mother Earth. This is in the process of being acknowledged, actually, by modern sciences, that we are embedded in the flow of the four sacred elements, and we are just spirits that come into being by putting intelligence in these matrices of matter, of both the four sacred elements, and we come into being. So we come from Mother Earth. She is our true mother, and we are going to resist whatever it takes, because now I believe there is a shift of consciousness. And like, for instance, the Occupy movement in Ottawa is going to be relaunched today at 3 o'clock Eastern Time, and they managed to acknowledge that this is unceded Algonquin territory, and they've changed their name. It's not Occupy movement anymore; it's Occupied movement, because this is occupied land. It's been occupied for the last 500 years. So part of this movement is, you know, becoming aware of this fact, and that we are going to resist, and we are going also to provide a new way of becoming humans, and also to accomplish the cosmic responsibilities we have in relation to all other living beings and living systems, including human nations, non-human nations, and also the spiritual realm. So I think this is very, very important, because this is a totally different way of understanding our position on the mysterious circle of life.
I wanted to maybe go back to something you said, because I don't quite believe that it's a pedagogy about hate. I don't think that we hate ourselves. I think the problem is when we imagine the world through such reductionism. You know what I mean? Like, we're taught in education that if you're going to get to the truth, you got to find that objective truth, that one thing that stands alone, that, you know what I mean? And nothing works like that. Life isn't like that. Life is interconnected, interrelated, you know, intertextual, right? We're constantly reading and reacting and responding. So perhaps I think that the gift that this moment of crisis has given us is that it's inviting a different possibility for a new paradigm, a paradigm of indigenous ways of being and thinking about the world that I see growing, you know, throughout certain sections of the academy. Obviously, several areas are still very resistant, but I do see those seeds growing. And so I want to talk a little bit about that, you know. What does it mean to be our relations?
Yeah, that's very important that you mention that, because basically in the Western mind, things are reduced to being individual blocks. And, you know, like all sciences usually are trying to quantify the building blocks of whatever realm they have to deal with. Like, for instance, in physics, they are after finding the building blocks of matter. In sociology, they are trying to find the building blocks of what makes the social tissue, and so on. You know, I could name all the sciences. So they lose perspective, because actually it is not about finding the individual expressions of things. If they do that, they will never come up with a result, because, you know, reality is fractal, so the minute part represents the whole. And that's an acknowledgement that's coming recently, the fractal nature of reality. That's something that we already have as indigenous peoples. And for us, what you mentioned, like intertextuality, relationship, is key to understanding the nature of reality. And when you understand that we are just a set of relationships, then you have to acknowledge that it takes two to make a relationship. And if these two, this parity, is in equilibrium, then harmony becomes also the framework of this existence. It's a very simple knowledge, but at the same time, it can be also a very complex way of understanding the world. And that's one of the basic parts. similarities that we have in indigenous worlds, that of simplicity on one side and that of complexity on the other side. So usually we use the theory of complexity, you know, modernly, to try to understand the real existence of living beings and living systems on our planet and beyond. So when you acknowledge that we are just a set of relationships, then you need to understand and you have to acknowledge and you have to honor as well the other. We go through so many different roles in our lifetime. Like, for instance, in this precise moment, you are the interviewer and I am the interviewed. So that's a parity. And we have other roles. Sometimes I am a professor and I have my students and we are dancing the cosmic dance of education, or sharing, rather. I am a son and I have my mom. And, you know, we have so many roles. But all the time there is a parity being deployed as reality. And we have to acknowledge that, because when we acknowledge the parity relation, the parity nature of existence, we have to acknowledge that there is a relation in between these two parts of the opposing but complementary forces that we are. And from there, then you have to acknowledge also that for harmony, to have a peaceful coexistence in between these two pairs, we need to have a harmony with our relationships. And that's, you know, I, for instance, the Occupy movement, I see that they are going through that path. They are acknowledging that this is all about changing the old paradigm that has totally failed with a new paradigm that acknowledges the fact that we are cosmic beings and that we have responsibilities. We have been living under the illusion of national states for about 300 years now. And if you just compare the amount of time that this phenomenon has been around, it's just nothing. It's just an anomaly in the existence of our species. We are like about 200,000 years old as Homo sapiens sapiens. And the state has been around only for 300 years. And if you make the division, it's going to, you know, the percentage of time that the state has been around is just nothing, you know. So eventually we'll have to move beyond the state because it's causing so much harm. And of course, when you talk about the state, we also have to talk about the corporations, that they have been around for about 100 years and they have, you know, they have caused so much damage to the planet that we are actually in the process of extinction. We are the sixth extinction, our species. Actually, as you say, the Western way of life has become the sixth massive extinction. And we are in the process of, you know, becoming extinct. And you just have to Google mass extinction, and you're going to see that this is true. This is not something I'm making up.
I was going to say that, you know, when we look at these brief moments of historical accounts, right, that define how we interact and how we see the world today, the shifts that have taken place going from an indigenous ancient way of looking at the world as relational, as interconnected, as interdependent, and needing to be in communion, not just with each other, but with the living world, to a world of commodities and distancing ourselves from each other and from the world. This has terrible repercussions, but as you point out, the occupied movement, at least it's raising those questions of colonization, those questions of hierarchies. Are we ready to challenge the notion of private property, and what will be the outcome of that?
I don't think we are ready yet, especially here in the north, but I think we are finding direction. I think we are awakening to acknowledging that we need a direction and that we need to deal with those issues like private property, because like private property, again, is an illusion. Even in sciences, there's nothing that can prove that something belongs to me. We need a set of laws made by human beings that actually are going to make me believe that I am the owner of something. And we have come so far in this delusion that we have actually enclosed the commons and we believe that we are owners of land. And actually the opposite, well, in a way the opposite is true. We cannot own land. Actually, we are part of the land. We are part of the landscape. And especially indigenous peoples, they weave their stories, their cosmogonies, their belief systems into the land. So they are the land. You know, as an Inuk elder shared with me, he told me, the land is not something that is outside of you. It's in your heart. It's a spiritual relationship. And for us indigenous peoples, that's the most sacred and the most fundamental relationship that we are going to have ever, the one that we have with the land, especially when we come into being as humans. That's the basic, most fundamental relationship we're going to have. And yet, you know, in the last years, we have managed, or rather, the Western view has managed to privatize land. And now they are privatizing water, they are privatizing even the human genome, they are privatizing everything. And you know, and privatization is just a total illusion. It's not real. You know, we haven't been like this ever. So, like, there's this anthropologist, Margaret Mead, she says that, like, 99% of our life as human species, we have lived in small tribes, in harmony with Mother Earth, and this period of time is just a total anomaly. We cannot predict anything from the point of view of modern Western human beings, and we cannot understand the past neither, because this is just so anomalous that we are totally lost and we are totally confused. But yes, the Occupy movement is bringing in lots of awareness and lots of light. Although they still need some time to mature even more, I think they are in the right direction.
We're on the right path.
Because I think the movement is made up of so many voices, and that acknowledges the fact that we all live in a circle. And since you have so many voices, you know, understanding the same ontological object from different positions, that talks about the basic sacred geometry of the cosmos, which is the circle.
That's beautiful. I want to talk a little bit about the constitution that was drafted by your students, because I think there are some really valuable insights.
Absolutely.
You speak about the guiding truth. What are the guiding truths that the students have chosen in this document?
Well, I had a course. It was called Sacred Relations, A Vision of Indigenous Peoples. And although we didn't have the time to really deploy and share all the teachings that we have as indigenous peoples, they, you know, they manage to go through this spiritual journey. And at the end of the semester, they came out with this incredible energy that brought them to, you know, create a constitution that was constructed following indigenous methodologies, if you wish. So the first thing they have is a prayer. And I'm just going to share the prayer. They have it in Algonquian, they have it in French, and they have it in English. And I'm just going to read the first few paragraphs. So it says, O Great Spirit, whose voice we hear in the winds, whose breath gives us life, hear us. For we are young, small, and weak. We need your strength and wisdom. May we walk in your beauty. Please guide and help us on our path for justice. Great Spirit, behold us. As we are blessed with the presence of our sisters and brothers, here and now, bless us with the medicine we are all guardians of, in these lifetimes, in these bodies, so we can be with each other in a good way, in a wise compromise, in acknowledging our cosmic responsibilities of sharing the words that come from our hearts, with courage and humility, fearlessly and prudently. Great Spirit, behold us, for we will truthfully understand our vision by remembering who we are and why we are. So this is the prayer. And the Constitution goes along the same lines. They constitute themselves as an indigenous association of students. So in that sense, they are changing the name of Aboriginal, because Aboriginal is a category that was crafted by the colonial Canadian state. So now, with this constitution, they are trying to change the notion of Aboriginal into a larger notion of indigenous. So also the, you know, Declaration of Indigenous Rights can also be implemented in Canada, because although Harper has recognized that there is this international instrument, you know, I mean, how much can you believe what he's saying? So by just, you know, stating the notion of indigenous, that we are all indigenous, and in my class, like about, I would say 90% of the students are non-indigenous, non-aboriginals per se, but I make sure that they understand that we are all indigenous to this planet. We don't need to be Aymara, Quechua, Guarani, Haida, or whatever nation, you know, there are on the planet. We're about 500 million indigenous peoples, like if we follow the nomenclature of several methodologies to, you know, to recognize indigenous peoples. But the important thing is that they understand, and they do understand, that we are indigenous to this planet. So we are going to do whatever it takes to defend our land, our planet. So that's a very important aspect of this constitution, and they have the guiding truths that they're going to be using in their journey. The first one is a Mohawk word, in which means one mind. The second principle is that one that comes from the Inuit tradition. It's a notion that dwells with consensus building for decision making, and in Inuktitut would be Ajikatiginik, something like that. You know, the pronunciation must be awful. Then again, the fourth principle is another Inuktitut word, which basically stands for collaborative relationships between people, individuals, and groups working together for a common purpose. That would be Pilirigatikingik. Again, my pronunciation must be terrible. And the last principle they have is an Algonquin word that means good relationships, Minuyuochayawak. And we understand, we are totally sure, because we've done the research, that these principles and other very important principles exist in all other indigenous nations, both human and non-human. And these principles come from the fact that we are responsible nations. In that sense, we are challenging the existence of the national state that is completely based on the notion of rights. But if you take the notion of rights out of the equation, the existences of national states, they are just going to collapse very quickly. But responsibility, first of all, it comes from the female force field. It's something very feminine to be responsible. And that responsibility is also something that you can find in any other nations across the globe. And of course, they also have a vision that they are going to entertain the relationships always consensually. They take all the decisions by consensus, and this is very different from the democratic systems that we have been imposed. You know, here everybody participates, and if it takes like a week or a month to come to an agreement by consensus, well, we'll take that time. And also another key element is that they want to reach out to other communities of students and other indigenous peoples across the planet, because although this is a local initiative, it understands that we are going through a very profound time of change, radical change, and that whatever we do, it has repercussions not only at local level, but globally. So they reach out to Achuar nations in the Amazon, they reach out to Maori people in New Zealand, and they are reaching out to all indigenous peoples. I'll share with you this constitution and the plan of action, because they are beautiful documents. These students, they are walking in beauty. I cannot express how proud I am of them and how much meaning they have brought into my life.
It's amazing the possibilities that we can create when we learn to see the world with new eyes, when we allow ourselves to embrace the complexity, the diversity that enriches, you know, our lives. And I think that takes both students who are open to new possibilities of learning and a teacher who sees himself like you as a learner, and it's, you know, and engages in reciprocal give and take with your students. I think that's marvelous. Thank you so much for sharing that story.
Thank you, Sylvia.
What gives you hope? What helps you move forward and bring these collaborative spaces?
And usually when I talk about hope, it's to bash hope. It's because I find that hope is quite paralyzing. And hope, if we try to craft a definition of it, and I try to do that with my with my students, we came to the conclusion that hope is the acknowledgement that we have lost agency in things. So we want to recuperate this, and we are going to do it in the warrior's way. The, you know, the Oglala warrior's way is that you engage in action not because you think that you are going to win or lose, but it's because that's the only thing that you can do for your future generations. In that sense, I don't like to hope that I'm going to do things. I mean, you can hope about something that you have lost agency about. For instance, if you're going to take a plane, you hope that the plane is going to make it to your destination. But you don't hope that you are going to have breakfast. You just go and you have breakfast. You know, and I think this is something that we learn from the animals. Like, I've been observing ants, I have a cat, I also have some earthworms, and I've been observing them. And of course, they don't have hope. They are they just are. You know, like the clouds as well. I observe the clouds a lot, and they are clouds. They are just clouds. That's the only thing they can be, and they are. The warrior's way is the same thing. We just have to do whatever it takes us to change this, and we are not going to hope about that. We're just going to acknowledge that we are a sacred bridge between our ancestors and our future generations, and we are just going to go out there and take action. We're going to be the DNA of our planet. And now when I say the DNA, I don't mean the desoxyribonucleic acid, which is in chemistry, right? I mean that we are descendants and now ancestors. We're going to try to be prudent elders, and we are going to do whatever it takes to change this for our children.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Take care. My guest is Marcelo Saavedra. He's a professor at the University of Ottawa.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.